to business now then. Rebecca Stevenson's the head of news at Business Desk. Kia ora, Rebecca. Lovely to have you back with us.
Thank you very much for having me back, Catherine.
I hope you've rested and there's been plenty of sun and sport and swimming and some good kaimoana and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's been great. We've had lovely, lovely weather.
That's excellent. Now, it is just booming, isn't it? This whole business of direct investing. Sharesies, of course, is one of the big names, and we've spoken to the founders on 9 to Noon. But others are getting on board now as well with new investment platforms.
Yeah, that's right. There have been a bunch of new investment applications that have launched, three in total, I guess, just for this month. As you outline, as financial institutions are trying to stake their claim in this share trading gold rush of sorts, and it is increasingly competitive. Sharesies is the known brand in many New Zealand households and is out in front. And they've also got Hatch, which provides US shares, which has a new owner and is making moves into Sharesies territory. We've got Stake, an Australian share trading platform that wants to aggressively push into New Zealand. And another Australian firm, Superhero, has announced plans to enter New Zealand too. In terms of the moves just this month, Sharesies itself has launched a new application, which is a mobile app, exactly the same as what it has offering now, but just making it more accessible directly from a phone without having to use its web browser. And the other two new applications in town are a share trading platform launched by Black Bull Markets and also a managed funds investment platform called Flint Wealth. Flint Wealth has positioned itself as a competitor to InvestNow, which is offering a range of managed funds users can buy into, starting from $250 each. So it's a little bit different to Sharesies. So what InvestNow and Flint Wealth are doing is they provide online access to KiwiSaver managed funds and term deposits from leading fund managers and banks from around the world. So not directly into the shares themselves, more into just the funds. And Flint is also a joint venture between some names listeners might know, Research IP, Trustees Executors, and also Harbour Asset Management. And the one thing that it's saying it's going to do that is going to differentiate itself is provide research reports, which have traditionally been done by private broking firms for their paying investor clients for each fund. So Flint says it's going to have a smart investment assistance, which is going to offer financial insights, research, and data so that users can make their own informed investment decisions. At this stage, the Flint offering is still pretty basic, but it has a really long list of funds to choose from and plans to launch a pipeline of new features and products over the first 12 months. So really just a sort of an initial foray there for Flint. Black Bull Markets, on the other hand, is targeting at quite a different end of the market. It's really looking to pitch its products to more semi-sophisticated, if you can call them that, retail share traders. Its chief executive says its platform is a bit more like a Bloomberg terminal for retail investors. And Black Bull is slightly different as well in that it's a licensed derivatives broker and has previously provided share trading through contracts for differences, or CFDs, which are a lot more sort of complicated for a retail investor to get their head around. But what it's trying to do is really wants to be more of a one-stop shop for brokerage in local and international markets for those experienced traders who feel like they can make those trade investments in shares directly and on their own, whereby Sharesies and sort of a Flint and Hatch are much more at that sort of less technical end of the market.
Really interesting stuff. It's just happening so quickly, and we'll talk in a moment about whether regulators are keeping up with it, the direct investing. The perception one has at the moment is that it's a lot of people doing a small amount of the total market, right, of their investing or of overall investing through these direct platforms. Does anyone have a sense of how much of the market it's becoming compared to, you know, the gigantic managed funds or the share brokers dealing with the stock exchange?
Gosh, I'd love to be able to quantify that. I mean, all we really have at the moment is sort of the numbers that we can get out of the user platforms. You know, Sharesies clocked over a really big milestone a couple of weeks ago. You know, it now has more than 500,000 users. Hatch, I'm just trying to look here. Hatch has got about, where is it? Sorry, about... oh, no, I've completely lost that.
That's
sorry,
fine.
Hatch has 130,000 users.
130,000. So it's reasonable numbers, but the difference is it's small amounts of investing, one presumes, compared to what you're getting through the institutional investors.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why, you know, it is, you know, fairly minuscule, and they just don't have the same level, as you've pointed out, as sort of advice and things like that as those professional investment broking houses do. So it is a small volume, but they're growing really quickly. And I guess the thing that's interesting about it is it adds that consumer layer onto trading and stock markets that we haven't seen before. And that's where we're getting this sort of interesting rubbing up, I guess, of those consumer affairs coming up against what has traditionally been a domain of professional broking houses. And so that's why you see the sort of people washing out, for example, around the meme trades and GameStop, and then taking claims and cases against the trading platforms. So yeah, there's certainly a small percentage, I think, of the volume, but becoming more known and more vocal just because they're consumers, you know, and that's considered, it's a bad look, isn't it, whenever consumers get washed out or on the bad end of a trade, that it's seen that professional investors or broking houses might have got a better deal on.
It is interesting. And, of course, a big focus is also on fees. And this is where it's potentially an interesting competitor to some of the other investors. I'm not just thinking about the share brokers necessarily, but probably much of the share market investing that New Zealanders do, if not the vast bulk of it, goes through their managed funds, their KiwiSaver or some kind of independent managed funds, right? It's just an interesting kind of dynamic if it, even if it doesn't eat up a significant amount of market share, if it begins to bring some scrutiny on things like fees.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, as you pointed out. I mean, we obviously had those changes that came through with the KiwiSaver default funds and a change on that risk perception setting. All of these things are adding into investors understanding more and more what they're doing. I think you've highlighted a good point there as well. You know, a lot of KiwiSaver investors, I think, have been divorced from the stock market, but we're seeing again now in this sort of tech and share sell-off that's been happening over the last couple of days. You know, I checked my KiwiSaver balance this morning. Unsurprisingly, it had dropped. You know, I do think it's good that people understand, in particular, I think, you know, that your KiwiSaver and managed funds, those things are made up of shares, which is not, you know, necessarily something that people are always understanding, you know, that there are lots of different individual shareholdings
shares,
up a lot
bonds,
of those funds.
Property, if they're in a mixed, mixed fund. The other thing, of course, is this difference between active management and passive management, which is a fascinating one, isn't it? And whether passive funds ends up over the long term outperforming active funds, where investment experts are making decisions. The strange thing about this new these new platforms emerging is that the individual is becoming the active investor. And again, you're left wondering, are we going to say, hey, we're not really qualified to be deciding what we're going to be putting our money into? Or are we going to find that actually it exposes some stuff about the industry and its supposed expertise? It's just a really interesting new development. Many people for a long time would not have gone near this. Other than some who had their share brokers and did it directly, they would not have gone near saying, hey, I want some shares in this company or that company. Now it's as simple as a click on the phone.
Yeah, it really is making a big difference. And we're just seeing a lot of excitement as well around stocks and trading and that sort of thing. I don't think I've ever really seen anything like it, you know, in my time. And it's pretty fascinating. I think we're going to see a bit of both. I think we're going to see some people who will make some pretty bad mistakes and will wash out. The one thing that I think Sharesies in particular has done really well since it's launched is it's put a big focus around building an investment community. You know, it has very active Facebook groups, and it tries to, I think, quite valiantly put out really good information to its users. It has regular podcasts with CEOs of the NZX listed companies that it does pretty much every week. It seems to be really responsive. And that community now is almost self-educating in some ways. You see them posting in there, oh no, you know, all my shares have fallen, and they'll be explaining to each other, you know, what you know, the answer to my sort of dumb question. So I think in that way, that's been really good that Sharesies has done that and has created a really vibrant investing community. On the flip side, you know, Sharesies itself has certainly tangled with the regulator. You know, it got in trouble last year for some of its anti-money laundering functions. You know, the market watchdog found it hadn't completely identified the verification for as many as 7,800 users. So, you know, as with anything, we're going to find problems. There's going to be growing pains, and these platforms are going to be looked at by the regulators, you know, because it is new and they need to understand what's going on these platforms. So they've been doing research and trying to talk to investors, but they certainly aren't taking their eye off the ball, you know, as I think these money laundering warnings showed.
Well, also doing your due diligence, reading prospectuses properly, reading annual reports properly, reading about whole sectors properly. This was the sort of the territory of anyone who used a share broker to go in and get involved in shares, or they used the share broker or a financial advisor to do it for them. Now, again, the onus really comes back to, and it's used to be buyer beware, it's user beware. The onus comes back to you now, that the fundamentals of good investing don't disappear just because you can do it so much more easily. In what ways are they challenging orthodox regulation, do you believe? One example might be, if we start with an easy example, Robinhood in the United States. And there were some concerns about some of these platforms essentially replicating gambling, right? The same kind of sort of dopamine hits that one gets playing the pokies was turning up in the way some of their platforms were designed, or what happened when your shares went up, right? So that's one obvious way where regulation is being challenged. But are there other ways, and how are the regulators doing in dealing with a disruption but not losing the principles of what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating one. I mean, Sharesies has certainly, again, also been involved in that gamification argument. You know, I remember when Sharesies launched, there was a lot of concern just around people worried about, that gamification, the fact that it was all colorful fruits and the way it looked, and that it seemed almost akin to, you know, like you say, like a gambling, a jackpot's, the look of a pokies almost sort of thing. So look, they are employing a lot of those similar sort of marketing and online tactics in terms of giving people that enjoyable sensation when they put money in and out of their accounts and those sorts of things. I think it's probably going to be tested similar to what's happening with Robinhood. It will happen particularly around possibly certain trades. And with anything, when you have to prove losses, you have to prove financial losses and show that. And that's where Robinhood has been pinged in the US for its actions around halting, in particular, the trading of those meme stocks to retail investors, but then institutional investors and other investors could continue to keep trading in that pause. And one Robinhood investor has actually been able to win a claim against the platform for that behavior. So I think that's going to happen in New Zealand too. You know, we haven't seen it yet, but as these kind of platforms are used more and more, we'll just start to see them become part of the normal complaints regime, you know, flowing through into the disputes resolution system. A lot of them are signed up for those sorts of things. So we'll start to see, I think, trends in terms of complaints and then possibly more action. The regulator is going to be keeping a watchful eye. They'll be doing their surveys and just trying to understand. But for them, it does feel they're a little bit wide-eyed and naively looking freshly at some of these things, including cryptocurrency.
Is this mainly the Financial Markets Authority?
Yeah,
various
right.
regulators involved. And it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because where they really got caught, and where we saw a lot of legislative change, was with the financial advisory sector. And we saw the finance companies going bust. And goodness, when was it now? It was one of the more recent, maybe back around the GFC, I think. So we had a whole sector almost collapse. But there was also a lot of effort went into saying, what do you have to be? What are your qualifications? What are your responsibilities if you're going to call yourself a financial advisor? That was a very complex area as well. But we're cutting out the middlemen with these platforms in some ways. And the question, here's where it might get to actually, Rebecca. It's similarly to where Facebook says, hey, we're not a publisher, we're just a platform. The question may become in time whether by providing the flat platform, you have responsibilities beyond being able to say, hey, we're just the platform.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think there's a really interesting example that's also unfurling on the crowdfunding platforms as well. This is also going to be an issue. You know, we've had a couple of examples in New Zealand on PledgeMe, which is one of the crowdfunding platforms here. And what these platforms can do is they can effectively raise money from the public for their businesses, but the levels of disclosure and financial thresholds are much, much lower, and there's just an assumed sort of higher risk. I mean, we've found examples where we've seen on PledgeMe asking for money where there are things in those, they're not a prospectus because that's not how it works, but in their claims where they've talked about deals that they didn't have, you know, contracts to market things that they were going to sell that didn't really exist. So I think it's going to be a lot of test cases actually for the FMA, because I don't think it's actually good enough to be able to say for PledgeMe and crowdfunding platforms or any platforms, you know, that really the risk can fall on the investor. We do expect the regulator to protect people to a certain extent, and I'm not sure that it's actually good enough to have platforms saying, oh, well, we took this information and published it. That's enough. So a lot of those rulings, I think, are yet to come. We would need to see the FMA really take action and do something on that. So, yeah, watch this space.
Nya mihi. Thank you. Rebecca Stevenson, Head of News at Business Desk.